Well, let's have a word of prayer as we get started. Father, thank you for this time. Again, help us to really learn from one another. And give us the ability to both interact and to sense what you're telling us to do personally about our own grandparenting. We pray in Christ's name. Amen. Now, this is a pretty heavy session that we've got today. So Mary and I are going to start out with something just a little bit lighter that has absolutely no relationship whatsoever to the topic at hand. Now, I'm sure some of you will be able to make some connections in some way, and it has to do with a big chili tasting contest down in Texas. And those of you who are non-Texans don't understand how serious Texans are about their chili. And so these are notes from an inexperienced chili taster named Frank, and I'm Frank, and so these are my notes.
How many of you are from Texas?
Oh, a couple. There you are. I've got a few.
You should be able to relate.
Great. Recently, I was selected to be an outstanding famous celebrity in Texas to be a judge at a chili cook-off because no one else wanted to do it. Also, the original person called in sick at the last moment, and I happened to be standing there at the judge's table asking directions to the beer wagon when the call came. I was assured by the other two judges that the chili wouldn't be all that spicy, and besides, they told me I could have free beer during the tasting. So I accepted this as being one of those burdens you endure when you're an internet writer and therefore known and adored by all. Here are the scorecards of the event.
The first chili was Mike's Maniac Monster Chili. It was a little heavy on the tomato sauce, said Judge 1. Judge 2 said a nice, smooth tomato flavor, very mild.
Holy smokes, what is this stuff? You could remove dried paint from your driveway with it. Took me two beers to put the flames out. Hope that's the worst one. These people are crazy.
Next chili, Arthur's Afterburner Chili. Judge 1, smoky taste, barbecue. Slight jalapeno twang. Judge number 2, exciting barbecue flavor.
Keep this out of the reach of the children. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to taste besides pain. I had to wave off two people who wanted to give me the Heimlich maneuver. Shoved my way to the front of the beer line. The barmaid looks like a professional wrestler after a bad night. She was so irritated over my gagging sounds that the snake tattoo under her eye started to twitch. She has arms like Popeye and a face like Winston Churchill. I will not pick a fight with her.
Chili number 3 is Fred's famous burned on the barn chili. Judge number 1 said excellent firehouse chili. Judge number 2 said a beanless chili, a bit salty, good use of red peppers.
This has got to be a joke. Call the APA. I've located a uranium spill. My nose feels like I've been sneezing Drano. Everyone knows the routine now and got out of my way so that I could make it to the beer wagon. Barmaid pounded me on the back. Now my backbone is in the front part of my chest. She said her friends call her Sally. Probably behind her back they call her Forklift.
Chili number 4 is Bubba's Black Magic Chili. Judge 1, black bean chili with almost no spice. Judge 2, hint of lime in the black beans, good side dish.
I felt something scraping across my tongue but was unable to taste it. Sally was standing behind me with fresh refills so I wouldn't have to dash over to see her. When she winked at me, her snake sort of coiled and uncoiled. It's kind of cute.
Chili number 5 is Linda's Legal Lip Remover. Judge 1 said, meaty, strong chili. Cayenne peppers are fresh. Judge 2 said, chili using shredded beef could use more tomato.
My ears are ringing, and I can no longer focus my eyes. I belched, and four people in front of me needed paramedics. The contestant seemed hurt when I told her that her chili had given me brain damage. Sally saved my tongue by pouring beer directly on it from a pitcher. pitcher. Sort of irritates me that one of the other judges asked me to stop screaming.
Chili number six is very vegetarian variety. Judge number one said thin yet bold vegetarian chili. Judge number two said the best yet, aggressive use of peppers and onions.
My intestines are now a straight pipe filled with gaseous flames. No one seemed inclined to stand behind me except Sally. I asked her if she wanted to go dancing later.
Chili number seven, Susan screaming sensation chili. Judge number one said a mediocre chili. Judge number two said, ho-hum, tastes as if the chef threw in canned chili peppers.
You could put a hand grenade in my mouth and pull the pin and I wouldn't feel it. I've lost sight in one eye and the world sounds like it's made of rushing water. My clothes are covered with chili, which slid unnoticed out of my mouth at some point. Good. At autopsy, they'll know what killed me. Go, Sally. Save yourself before it's too late. Tell our children I'm sorry I was not there to conceive them. I've decided to stop breathing. It's too painful, and I'm not getting any oxygen anywhere. If I need air, I'll just let it in through the hole in my stomach. Call the X-File people and tell them I found a supernova in my tongue.
Final chili is Helen's Mount Saint chili. Judge number one, this entry is a good balanced chili. And judge number two, a perfect ending, a nice blend of chili.
And Frank says, Mama. Well, that has nothing to do with anything. But this is a heavy lesson. And so as before we get started in just the introduction, let me just tell you what we're going to do today. We're just going to stop when we run out of time, and we'll continue next week, because as we worked, this is the first time we worked through any of this. And so we really don't know the timing on the content. So we'll just stop and continue next week where we leave off, if that's okay. So, and Mary had a thought.
Just as an introduction to this lesson on difficulties in our grandparenting, reminded me of a situation when one of our granddaughters was about 18 months old, and she had the RSV virus, which probably all of you and your grandchildren have had one time or another. She was hospitalized. And in the hospital room, they had all kinds of sweets on the walls, and they had, what's going on?
This is the recorder, dear. They really need your sweet voice on it.
Oh, okay. But it's humming. Oh. And they had appropriate videos for the children. It was just a very pleasant place, lots of toys. But if she needed any kind of procedure done, she was taken from her room down the hall to what they called the hurt room, so that she knew when the personnel came that she was headed for the hurt room. And of course she would cry, and she wasn't very verbal at the time, but she knew enough to say bye-bye, wanting them to go away. And it reminds me that sometimes life is going along very pleasantly. Suddenly, God takes us to the hurt room. Now, our granddaughter's mother always went with her, and God never takes us to his hurt room, but what he is with us. And I thought that illustration pretty clearly showed what it's like when we come to a hurting place in our lives.
The scriptural background is a bit scant on grandparenting. If you do any looking on in your, through your concordances and so forth, So you have to search around a little bit and sort of read between the lines. But one of those that we thought we would mention was the issue of Jacob, Joseph, and the grandchildren. Now, this has got a long history, you know, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And if you recall, in Genesis 31, verses 26 through 28, this is when Jacob had gone to earn his bride, and the uncle Laban was there. And you remember he ran off without saying anything. And it says here, Jacob pitched his tent in the hill country of Gilead when Laban overtook him. And Laban and his relatives camped there too. Then Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done? You've deceived me and you've carried off my daughters like captives in war. Why did you run off secretly and deceive me? Why didn't you tell me so I could send you away with joy and singing to the music of tambourines and harps? You didn't even let me kiss my grandchildren and my daughters goodbye. You have done a foolish thing." And so began a series of conflicts. Jacob did run off. And you recall that he went on and with Isaac, Jacob, then his name became Israel. He had the 12 sons, Joseph the favored one. Joseph was sold off into Egypt by his brothers. And then in Egypt, you know all that story where they came and they recovered and all that. But if you look at the history, there was constant sibling conflict and jealousy. And that's one of the difficulties. How you treat one child's kids versus how you treat another child's kids. And then the next thing we find in this is that Joseph had a mixed marriage. He married, and it's never explained. She wasn't God-fearing, apparently. She was actually the daughter of one of the Egyptian priests. And you really get nothing more on that. Now, of course, his father was not around to critique it. But the result is that these children were not truly Jewish, if you want to say in that way. Now, I've heard that the Jewish line runs through the mother. Well, the mother was not Jewish. And so you can imagine just the kind of conflict. And then later, when Jacob is going to bless the two children of Joseph. Now think about this. This was next to the youngest child. Jacob decides to bless them and not the other grandchildren. At least we don't have a record of it. And then when Joseph presents the children, what happened? Remember that? What did he do? What was that? I can't. Bless the younger one. Yeah, the younger one. He, you know, Joseph presented them properly, and of course he chose Ephraim, the youngest, over Manasseh, and over all the other grandchildren. And said that Joseph was the key person in this line. Can you imagine the tensions? And then, of course, when he dies, then there's this big conflag between all the other brothers, giving this false statement that our father said to bless us and all that sort of thing. And so there are long-term consequences. And you, as grandparents, are going to put long-term consequences into your children's lives. And then, of course, the closing verse of the Old Testament, which probably is stretching it just a bit to use it just on grandparenting or children, but it says this, "See, I will send you the prophet Elijah before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers, or else I will come and strike the land with a curse." Okay, now we will get into now the difficult circumstances. We just simply want to say that they are inevitable. Somewhere along the line, you will not escape some of the difficult circumstances. And I like the quote that we put in here, no matter how old a mother is, she still watches her middle-aged children for improvement. And also with the grandchildren. And so Mary is going to talk about part of it. We'll start discussing the various difficult circumstances, starting with differences in values.
All of you have noticed that your... All of you have noticed that your children have different differences from you. If they're just like you, maybe we aren't having any generational improvement. But there is the fact that you will see differences, and especially when they marry, because they're setting up a brand new home, a brand new relationship, and they will bring different values to that relationship, and it will look different from what you might expect or want. And one of the touchiest issues is the discipline of the grandchildren, both yours and theirs. And we have to remember, we are not the disciplinarians of those grandchildren. We are not the ones God is going to hold responsible for the major input in their lives. We are supplemental. We're important, but we're not the first line with the grandchildren. I would recommend that we never correct our grandchildren when their parents are present within the hearing of the grandchildren. Now, we have one set of grandchildren, and the decibel level in that home is extraordinarily high. And sometimes it's a temptation in the back of my mind to say, could we tone it down just a little bit? But that's not my job. And if I'm if the decibel level is bothering me, I need to remove myself, not say something. That's their choice in that home. So if we feel we must say something to the parents, always out of hearing of the children. And if the children are in my home and I am responsible for them, this is a personal preference. And you with your children would have to decide what's right for you. I would never lay a finger on the children. I would never physically discipline a grandchild. But if I can't keep them under voice control, then there's something wrong and need to take a second look. Now, this may be different with you. How many disagree with me? I'm secure. I can handle it. You would disagree. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, I see your children and your grandchildren looking at you as authority figure. You know, of course, they love you, but they still look at you as a parent and or a grandparent as authority figure. And I don't think we can just give away our job of teaching right and wrong to the parents, especially if they're not there. And there are times when a SWAT gets their attention more so than saying stop it. So.
Well, generally, Mary and I disagree on this over the years at various points. And this whole issue of corporal punishment is one of those issues. And what kind of a SWAT is probably it. But when they're not there, boy, it is very, that's a whole different story, I think. Go ahead, you didn't quite finish.
Well, yeah, that's... And I think back into history, my grandparents, and further back, I think today's world is, we don't want to take responsibility of discipline, and I think that kind of hurt this world, the present world. in past family situations, grandparents and sometimes even neighbors would be there to make sure that the kid didn't go off half wild.
That's a good point. Now, I want to distinguish what we're talking about. There are several kinds and levels of discipline. One, of course, is physical, which we ought to really resist tremendously. Just be very, very careful on it. The other is voice discipline. I mean, even with our kids there, if we see them doing something, we'll say something, but it's how you say it. And the parents will pick up on it pretty quickly. Now, if they're not in the room, I mean, I would say, like I had three of them out at the playground yesterday. I had to discipline them. You know, the little one swatted some other kid. There was crying and, you know, and all this stuff. And so I'm in there trying to, you know, and I had to, and then he didn't want to go. So I had to physically grab him by the arm carefully and drag him to the car. I mean, in a sense, that is discipline. So it's a spectrum of things, but just, I think our message is be very careful.
Well, I think it also depends on, in our case, we have two daughters, and they had our granddaughters 12 weeks apart, so they're kind of, you know, we're always together. And one daughter would prefer that if she's there, we don't say anything, and I honor that. The other daughter says, hey, you know, if you think she needs something done, then I trust you to do it.
That's...
Know your own children, and then honor what they want.
Right, and to have that verbally out front.
Yeah, and I think, didn't you have that on the list somewhere there?
Maybe.
But anyhow, the asking them what they want, or to do your right.
Yeah.
Jim?
Well, I think she answered it, but it's got to be situational, too.
Right.
Let's say the parents are disconnected from their children just because of work or the situation, then maybe they're dumping their grandchildren on you. I think you have a stronger role at that point. But if you have a strong mom and dad that have values, have an idea of how they want to raise that child, I think hands off on the discipline, my gosh, yes. Because I think you could step on parents' toes very easily.
Well, the daycare is a very key thing if you're taking care of them all the time.
I remember there was a non-Christian who had a finally, they had a child late in life, but in their 40s. And it was fun to see because we became grandparents about the same time they became parents. So it was kind of fun kind of interacting with them. And I said, well, what are some things that you can tell us as grandparents, you know, since you're closer to my age and we had a good rapport going? So he wrote out this email to me, and about 10 things that the grandparents are allowed to do and 10 things that the grandparents aren't allowed to do, and one of them was the discipline was very strong in their lives because they knew how they wanted to raise that child specifically. So it's got to be situational.
That's right, Jim. Yes.
Are you trying to strike a balance to where you're not trumping the authority of the parent to where the child no longer sees their parent as an authority figure but rather looks to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's part of what we're trying to do. Now, Mary's going to get into it here, but what if we have a totally different view of discipline and so forth than the children? I mean, some may just let them run wild. And we say, hey, this is not the way to raise them. So I'm going to turn to Mary to go to that next point.
Al wanted to say something.
Sometimes it changes, too. And some of your children will come home, maybe for whatever reason, and come to live with you.
Right.
And your grandchildren. That's the time to sit down at the table with the grandchildren and the parent and talk with them about the rules of the house, what we expect, and what they can expect from us. Because then you clear the decks immediately. Nobody has a misunderstanding of how the discipline's going to happen with our small grandchildren.
That's good. Actually, we get to that, maybe not today. I don't know how fast we're going to go, but that is a key point, Al. Thank you. Okay, well, I think from our discussion here, we see that it's really up to us to be in tune with our kids, if we can be, and to have a frank discussion about it. get it out in the air, clear the air, and keep it open. We should cooperate with the parent's style of training and discipline, because it will build their trust in having their children with us. For example, how about movies, or what would you let them see on the TV at your home? It should be in keeping with what their parents would allow. And things like food, you know, we use the illustration of the vegetable grandma and the candy grandma. And so we have to understand that we need to stay within the boundaries that the parents set up. And one thing we can do, and this was helpful to me with my first child, we can demonstrate an alternative to the way they're disciplining. When our first child was born, we had an old black and white TV, and you know, you turned the knobs and so on. And he was about 13, 14 months old, and he loved those knobs, and he would keep turning. Well, Jerry's grandmother came to live with us for a couple of months, wasn't it? And so one day, Steve was over there turning the knobs. I said, "No, Steve, no, don't touch that. Don't touch that." And I kept saying it, and he kept touching. And finally, Grandma came over, and she didn't say anything to me, didn't say anything to him, just lifted him up and took him to the other side of the room and gave him a toy. And I thought, aha, this technique works. So sometimes, just to demonstrate the possibilities. Now, there's a guide here that I think is important, and that is that we intervene in safety situations. If you see your own children, let's say maybe their child is 8 years old, and they put them in front of the TV and run to the store, leave them alone, would you intervene? Would you say something? Maybe their physical punishment you feel is too severe. Would you say something? There are numerous situations like this that we could cite, but if the child is at risk, I think both legally and morally, we have a right to say something. Here again, it's very touchy, and it could be risky to place ourselves in that situation. It could break the relationship. But if a child is at risk and the grandparents observe it, they have a duty to say something. Now, you can present this in a way that isn't accusational, but to say something like, "Have you considered what you might do instead of what you're presently doing?" And take it from there and see how their response goes. But for the sake of the grandchildren, be prepared to do it.
Now, we're going to get to this later, but it makes a difference whether this is your daughter or your son, or your inner daughter or daughter-in-law, and how you correct it. I mean, it's a... we're going to get to that. We're going to talk about the differences in that regard and how you have this conversation.
No, I think you've got finances.
Oh. I have finances. Does that mean a bigger allowance, or what's that? Okay.
I get the allowance.
This is interesting. Have you noticed a difference in the way your children spend than the way you spend? A difference in your value systems? Maybe there's a big difference in your income level and that their income level. And of course that affects the grandchildren. Maybe they earn a great deal more than you do, or a great deal less. So this is something you need to talk over as a couple, if indeed you're grandparenting as a couple. It's a pretty high value with many in our age range not to have severe debt. Now, you know, we probably have mortgages or maybe a car payment or something. But credit card use for most of us is limited, but may not be for our children or our grandchildren, that credit cards are just a part of their income rather than a spending factor. And so what is your value versus their value? How about, do you buy modestly? Are you a proponent of Sears? And maybe they're more Lord & Taylor types. Although I heard Lord & Taylor is going to be sold, so maybe that isn't a good illustration. But do they buy the best, and do you buy modestly, or the other way around, and does that bother you? I think in this situation we have to say, is this sin on their part, or is it personal preference? And oftentimes when we're talking about speaking to our children, especially when our grandchildren are involved, this is a good question to ask. Is this sin? Is this anti-biblical? Or is this just the way we've chosen to live our lives? How about rescuing and generosity? How often do you rescue if they're having difficult times? How far do we go if we have resources to help? Well, certainly one factor would be if the grandchildren are in any kind of risk or danger. We want to help as much as we're able to. But how about if they've gotten themselves into a financial pickle and they want to get out, do we take them into our home? We spent a couple hours with a couple this week who are discussing this very thing. The business their children have has diminished, I guess you'd say, and they're having a very difficult time. They'd like to live with our friends for several months while they get back on their feet. And here's where your comments come in, Al. We said you have to have it laid out. The parts of the house the children may come into, the amount of time, attention you're going to give to the grandchildren. Well, are you just going to be a de facto babysitter while they're there? I mean, lots of things. How do we rescue? We know one family where they have about an 1,100 square foot house, and for 6 months, their two married children with a total of three children, grandchildren, moved in with them, while the children were building homes twice as large as the one they were living in with their parents. Well, I don't think we would have gone that direction, but they felt the Lord leading them. So this is something to discuss, and sometimes before it actually comes up, because you can observe when your children are going into a nosedive financially.
How many of you have had children live with you? Okay. And how many of you have had them there more than 3 months? Okay, a few of you have. What did you find that was either difficult or what helped you?
It was a joy to have them with us.
And a surprise.
Yeah. The little ones were just great.
Okay.
Along came a Labrador puppy.
Oh, that.
Managed to chew up some things and tear up gardens, but so what? You build a garden again and you buy something else that puppy chewed up, because that was a part of the family that came. And you accept them on that basis. And we had a great joy of being able to take our grandchildren to church. We were not babysitters. Ellie and I were both working. We had just got out of a nosedive ourselves in business, and we were recapping again.
And we made that very clear to our daughter. And she said, no problem. I will make sure that the children are taken care of. So consequently, we did not do that. At times, we had the children with us at meals, the things we would do with them. It was just great. And we were sorry to see her go back to us.
Well, that's a good answer. We had an English Mastiff with us. He ate the siding in the house. He tore up the entire screen door in the back. It was an absolute disaster. I was out playing with the kids yesterday with Frisbee, and I said, "Jan, I sprained my ankle in our backyard." It's because the dog had destroyed it. It was kind of like rolling the hills. And so it wasn't that long ago.
Well, the one thing that Jerry really didn't appreciate, he was sitting outside in the sunshine and just reading. This is very unusual for him. He's not very good at relaxing. But he was just reading this book, and he came inside to get something to drink. And while he was inside, the dog ate the last half of the book. So,
but, this dog is like a horse. And were there any other comments that you want? Yes, ma'am.
We had a situation where our kids were having a house built, and they were with us for several months with our granddaughter. I think the relationship that you have before your children marry and also become parents is really important, because we didn't have any problems. So I think anything that was going wrong before would be intensified if they're together and they're adults. You know, I do think you have to realize that they are no longer your children.
Right.
That they're adults. But, like Alan was saying, you have little things that come up, but basically we enjoy them.
Good point. You want to continue on the rescue? Yeah. We can get back to that again at some other point, because there are some other rescue things that are pretty significant.
And we've pretty well covered this, just the lifestyle issues, how you view theirs, how they view yours, what you're going to do to enhance the lifestyle of your grandchildren. Always with the permission of the parents. Do you send them to camp? Do you buy them things? Do you, every time they come from school with some sort of sale item, as you all know, do you get involved every time? How many gold C books can you use up in a year? You know, that kind of thing. So just giving consideration to that.
And I'm going to talk a little bit about inheritance. It is not too early to talk about that. The whole situation of inheritance is something you need to think about. Oh, by the way, in terms of helping, when our kids were fairly young, we just didn't have anything. Like when we moved here, we had zero debt and zero savings. But as they moved out and got through college, then we started being able to save a little bit more. And so we have made a pattern in terms of help, to help with preschool, not all, but a portion. A Christian school for one of the kids, and certain camp things. We've chosen selectively what we are going to help with, and it's almost never all. Now, inheritance. This is an interesting thing. We decided several years ago we wanted to start putting a little bit of money aside for the grandchildren's education. So we opened up, and some of you are in finances know this, we opened up a Schwab account where, I forget what you call this, is it Utma or something like, pardon me?
Utma,
okay. And did it. Now we found out that at age 21, that it goes immediately to them, and we're redoing our will right now, and we're going to set aside, instead of putting it there, we're going to put it into a trust. Now, we don't have much, but what little we do, we're going to put it there that can be used for education, for medical situations, for potentially people getting into a home, et cetera, et cetera.
and to try to fund that at a moderate pace as we can. Now, you say, well, I don't have much. I don't know any of your financial situations, but just your home, if you own your home, is a pretty big thing. And so your estate is probably bigger than you imagine. And a major decision that you will need to make, and that we have been discussing quite a bit ourselves now, is should it all be given directly to the children, or should we skip it and leave things to the grandchildren? The other thing you have to think about is, what if there's a divorce? And then how does that money flow? I'm just telling you, it's worth thinking about, because you don't know what'll happen. Back away. Yeah. You had a comment?
Just the idea that whatever you leave in an inheritance, it's something that will promote your own values.
Yeah.
Like in this trust, it would be things like mission trips, or we place a high value on music. So could the trust give them music? So it's not just something that maybe they'd like to do, but it would be something that would generationally pass on the values.
In fact, our attorney that we're working with has really encouraged us to write up a document with our values. Now, that's a whole other issue. And by the way, on some aspects of it, we have not agreed. We've had some rip-roaring arguments about how to do which and how to do it. So don't think this is a smooth process, because there's something about a sense of finality when you're doing inheritance type things. But it's better to think ahead. Both do you leave it equally to them? You know, what if one of the children, they're just phenomenally good, they've got a great job, and the other set of kids just really are scraping along? Maybe they're missionaries. You know, one of your kids goes to work for, you know, Oracle and has stock in the company and doing great, and the other one decides to go to Papua New Guinea and has absolutely no savings and no ability to help those kids. Do you treat them all equally? Okay, we aren't going to give you that answer, but I want you to think about that kind of circumstance. Yes?
Are you setting up a personal family trust with then specify what you want for the grandchildren, or is it a specific grandchildren's trust?
No, it's a family trust, and we'll have a trustee that if, let's say, one of our kids, I hope that doesn't happen, but gets divorced, that it could be used in that regard too. And as long as we're alive, we're the trustees. And so there are, boy, we tried to think out some of these things through, and it's not fun, it's not easy. But it's really forcing us to think more carefully about the future and for our grandchildren. That's all I can say. That's why Mary asked me to take this little section, because we have been wrestling with this in the last half a year. We haven't got it done yet, by the way. Yes?
There's another issue you probably have to consider, and that's if a child or grandchild becomes disabled.
Yes.
And if that child or grandchild, say they're on SSI, if that child or grandchild inherits directly
That's exactly right. See, that's another very key point, the government support of that person. And so there is some other thing. The other is age. At first we'd said 21, and then we changed to age 30 when certain inheritance, or then I think where we are now is a certain amount at age 30 and some at 35, you know, just to try and put some protections around it. And by the way, just this is totally off the subject. Even though our estate is not very big, we decided not to give it all to the grandchildren, to the children. And we are off the top giving to the church, to the navigators, to other kinds of things, and then up to a certain limit, not to just automatically do it. We have come to the conclusion that if beyond a certain amount, it's probably not too good. Now, there are books like Die Broke and Give It All Away and whatever. But one thing I want the children to learn and the grandchildren is to give. And to give generously. To think about that kind of thing. Okay, we might want to come back to that. If you want to, we'll discuss that again. Now, I'm going to go and take the little section here on... Is it my turn now? Yeah, okay. On spiritual values. This is very frequent. I remember one of our daughters said, well, Dad, we don't really believe quite like you believe. Now, they're walking with God, they're doing things, but practice-wise and the kind of worship or whatever was in her head, it wasn't what she thought was in our head. And so we had to realize, why don't you step forward, hon? There you go. We had to realize that I need to respect their ability to express their spirituality. Okay, that's the first key thing. The second thing is when there is strong disagreement, to ask their permission and to influence when they're, for instance, when their parents are not spiritually active. That is, they may just not be walking with God at all. So they come to our home, and all of a sudden we're reading Bible stories and doing all this can create a great deal of conflict. Particularly if your child knows the Lord and marries a non-believer. There are all kinds of circumstances, and we need to ask permission. Certainly you need to pray for them and love them no matter what. And then what we want to do is in our home, we do what we want to do, basically. If we have grace, we're going to have grace. If we're going to have devotions at the table, we're going to have devotions at the table. I don't think it should be controlled. Now, you need to be careful. But now when I'm in their home, that's a different story. I won't take over that home. The other issue that is that the end, Ron, on spiritual values? Yeah, okay, now I want to go to moral values. Okay, with moral values, there's some significant things here. What if your son or daughter has a live-in boyfriend or girlfriend after a divorce? What does that say to the kids? Lifestyle choices. All kinds of things that cross your boundaries morally, you may have to deal with. And I can't give you a 1-2-3 on this. First of all, they know your value system. So they know that you're already disapproving. So whether or not you change your children's value system is one issue. The next has to do with the grandchildren and what they are going to think about this. And I think that's pretty open ground as far as having discussions on that. What about alcohol? What about other vices that you may have? And I'm not saying alcohol is necessarily all that bad, you just don't do it, but I'm just saying that it has a tremendous influence on the grandchildren. The statistics show that most kids who become addicted start drinking before age 12. In fact, some down at age 8. And most of them, from what I've read, it started in their parents' home. They would sneak beers, they would sneak this, and, you know, whatever. And their little bodies just got there. What about dating standards? Who they date, how they date, when they date. And put the next one up for me, will you? Yeah, their friendships. Who those kids have as friends. Do you have discussions with them on who their friends are? By the way, that's a great community. Well, tell me about your friends. What's Susie like? And with our daughters, I know there are certain ones that they will not let their children go to those people's homes, period. If they are going to be friends, they have to come to their home. Now, that's good, but what if they didn't do that? And you start seeing those influences. You, as a grandparent, can have an influence. Because believe me, those grandchildren want your approval. And finally, what about TV and movies? Just as one of the things, what will you take them to? Now, one of our daughters done a superb job on this. I remember being away one time with a couple of my grandsons, and we're going to watch a movie. And she said, gee, I'm not, and we named it. And she said, I don't know that Mom will let me watch that. And it wasn't bad, but I decided I'm not going to make this decision. I took the cell phone, called Mom, said, Mom, is this one okay? And I didn't usurp. And surprisingly, they didn't just do what I wanted to do. Now, it could be the other way around, that what they watch in their home, you know, the kid, they just let them watch anything. But in your home and how you influence them, we need to have discussions on that. Okay, now I'm going to move into the issue of divorce. How are we doing time-wise? Yeah, we've got about 15 minutes. Psalm 10:14 says, but you, O God, do see trouble and grief, and you consider and take it in hand. There are two divorce situations that I'm going to mention, and some of you have undoubtedly experienced this. That is the divorce of the grandparents. Some of you may be divorced and remarried. Okay, this gives multiple grandparents to that those grandchildren, as well as a number of step-grandchildren issues, and we'll talk about that later. But first of all, we have to realize that any divorce, whether on the grandparents' part or on the parents' part, causes stress and strain with those grandchildren. And then what ensues is a lot of issues as regards holidays, weddings, birthdays. Now, either way, and I'll kind of mix the two a little bit, but if the grandparents are divorced and you're having their 12th birthday, and both the two divorced grandparents want to come, and maybe the step-grandparents want to come, I mean, that's a very awkward situation, isn't it? I'll never forget when my son, you know, I come from a divorced home. My stepfather and my natural father had never met. And at our son's wedding was the first time that the two of them were going to be there. And brother, I was, what was I, 40-something, and I was just nervous as a cat. Didn't know what would happen, and I mean, it caused a great deal inside me. I don't know whether it did for them. All I'm saying is there are significant issues that relate to that, and you have to work them out. The next thing is that the grandchildren will not understand. I remember all my stepbrothers always wondered, they told me as they became adults, why my name was White and their name was Sundell. Because my stepfather did not adopt me. And in fact, I know why they didn't. It would have broken my grandmother's heart to have lost the name White, so they did not. But it caused a great deal of confusion on the part of my half-siblings. And we had discussions on that later. And the other fact is that remarriage will involve often three and four sets of grandparents. Now, it's complicated, and what I believe we just need to have, we need to demonstrate humility, forgiveness, and honesty. And as those grandchildren get older, you're going to have, I think you'll need to explain it. I wouldn't try when they're real young, because it doesn't connect. But they're going to want to know, and I think they deserve to know some of the facts. Now let's talk about the parents' divorce. Big issue of parental custody. And the major thing I want that you should communicate, it is not the grandchildren's fault. It is not their fault. And then you have a problem of saying, whose fault is it? Now, all of us know that it's never just one-sided. There are some cases where it's clearly one who runs off with someone else, et cetera, et cetera. But it often is not. Now, how are you going to explain this to the grandchildren? And the other thing is you need to be very careful not to take your child's side indiscriminately. Let me give you an illustration of that. My parents divorced when I was just a few months old. I didn't meet my grandfather till I was 13. But when I was just about a year to a year and a half old, I didn't meet my father. When I was about a year and a half old, and I was told this later on, my father had gotten remarried, came to visit me, but his mother, my paternal grandfather, would not allow him to be there without her being there, because she didn't approve of what he had done. And so they were in my other grandparents' home, where my mother and I lived. And my mother, I was told, came out of a bedroom crying. And Grandmother White says, "What's wrong, Lois?" And she said, "Well, Gene says, my dad, that now that he's married, he's going to take Jerry to go live with him." And my grandmother, his mother, walked into that, said to him, "You will do nothing of the sort. You get yourself out of here and don't ever think of that again." And this was her own son that she was telling that to. And then she actually managed my getting to know him when I was 13. I mean, this was complicated, and it is complicated. But God, she was a wise woman, and she was careful to make good judgment. Now, see, just because a daughter or a son is your daughter or son, and there's a divorce, you know, you've got to be very careful how you take those sides. For one thing, just as a practical consequence, it will affect your relationship to those children later. And by the way, there is a whole legal system out there now of grandparents' rights, and that you can look at. And when you do this, you need to clarify the visitation. You need to make extra effort to remain in touch, particularly if the children do not stay with your son or daughter. You see, what the custody is the other direction. And to stay in touch. And later on, you're going to have to deal with what I call issues of, and I put a note here, maintain contact with your former in-laws if you possibly can. If you can be cooperative with them. Boy, it's tough, by the way. That's very tough. And then I would also say that we need to deal with truth and justice. I'd like to read you, there's a little book, and by the way, I put several books on the back, and we're going to give you that list of resources, but you're welcome to look at them. Some are real good, some of them are not so good, but the stuff that we've been able to find. And in this particular area, here is a letter from the grandfather and grandmother to the grandchildren when their parents got divorced, and I like to read it to you. "Dear grandchild, Grandma and Grandpa know that you're hurting right now because Mommy and Daddy are breaking up. It's called divorce, and you probably know some other children who've gone through this. It happens a lot, more than anyone would like, but we want you to know that you're not alone. When you're at school, ask around, and you're sure to find lots of other kids who have been through what you're going through. And they are surviving. You'll survive, too. Although Grandma and Grandpa know that you probably don't feel that way right now. It's no fun at all, is it? Just a little while ago, things looked fine. Everything seemed to be just right, and now everything seems to have fallen apart. We really wish we could somehow kiss all the boo-boos and make everything right, but sadly, honey, we can't do that. We want you to know that this time is difficult for us, too. It makes us very sad to see the hurt and uncertainty in your eyes. When we sense that you are hurting, we hurt, too. Mommy and Daddy have found that, for whatever reasons, they can't go on living together. You must know that Mommy and Daddy still love you very much, even if they are having problems with each other. We want you to know several important things that we hope will help you go through this scary and difficult time. The first thing we want to tell you is that it is not your fault. You know, whenever a divorce happens, almost all children think that they did something that made it happen. And we want to promise you this: this is almost never true. And we want to promise, mommies and daddies who break up are doing so because they are having some big problems in their relationship, and you are not to blame. If you're blaming yourself even a little bit, please let us know. Talk to us. Write us. And we'll be your special friends and listen to you. The second thing we want you to know is that you probably can't fix it. Lots of kids imagine that they might be able to find the perfect thing to say and do, and magically, mommy and daddy will start loving each other again. We're sorry to tell you that almost never works. Sometimes mommy and daddies do get back together, but that happens because they found their own reasons to do so. The third and maybe the most important thing we want to tell you is this: we will never divorce you. We will always be there for you when you need us. Sometimes we may be far away, and you can always talk to us because you promise to be the very, and we promise to be the very best listeners we can. You need to know that we won't ever take sides between your mommy and daddy. The only side we're going to take is yours. Instead, we'll be good listeners. We'll help you find good things to do and great ways to spend your time. We'll search for fun, and we'll make some of our own too. You might think you'll never be happy again or that things will never feel right again. We can understand those feelings. But we want you to know something we've learned because we've lived so long and seen and experienced so many things. You will laugh again. It will get better. You'll laugh and grow and experience joy again. Good things will happen. You'll have many good times with Daddy and many good times with Mommy again. We assure you, it won't be the same as it was, but your life will be a good one. Now, here's a list of things you can count on. Nothing you can ever say or do will make us stop loving you. We'll love you forever. When we're in heaven, we'll still love you. These are things you can count on now. Secondly, we'll be good listeners for you. Share your feelings. Thirdly, we'll give great hugs and warm, long back rubs. And we'll still make your favorite foods. You can contact us easily. We're enclosing a card with our address, home phone number, cell phone number, and email address. So no matter where you are, you'll always be able to reach us. If you have to, you can call us collect. We've also included a pack of stamped postcards addressed to us, so you can always send us a card. And there's a stack of stamped addressed envelopes for when you have bigger, longer things to write or a nice picture to send us. Honey, you're not alone. Your mommy and daddy still love you, and even if they are breaking up, we'll always love you, and remember, we will never divorce you. Never. Love, Grandma and Grandpa. So, there we are.
Just listening to it makes me realize we can send that kind of a letter whether there's a divorce or not. Just reassuring them that there are people in their lives who will never, never abandon them. Just a minute.
Why don't you try and cover death and disability and we'll stop there.
Okay. This may not be a situation for any in this room, and I don't know that we need a show of hands of any of you who've lost a grandchild, but you may have done so and found it very painful, and it can be through miscarriage, or perhaps a grandchild was adopted out, or it could be the death of a grandchild. We have a friend who lost her husband, and then her grandson was killed. And her son could not handle it, and he committed suicide. So the three closest relatives, male relatives in her life, were gone. And it was very painful, and only with the help of the Lord did she get through that time. And I want you to know that if you lose a grandchild, it's like people regard it as a secondary grief. When our son died, we found out that sibling grief was not given much attention. And it wasn't considered very serious. But people who are not the immediate relative, I guess you could say it that way, are sometimes ignored as far as their grief is concerned. So not just for us personally, but if we're helping somebody, some other grandparents who have lost grandchildren. We have a friend who is an oncology a pediatric oncology nurse with Memorial Hospital, and sees a great deal of loss of children, and specifically says that it's very hard on the grandparents. They grieve not just for their grandchild, but they grieve for their own child who is grieving as well. Just touching on this, we don't need to belabor it, but it's in a group this size, it's very likely it could be a possibility. You can just scoot through those things, Ron. Thanks. And just a few words about if a grandchild has a disability. And these could be overt health problems. It could be birth defects. It could be mental struggles. It could be physical. It might be something that's curable, or it might be a lifelong disability. And what can we as grandparents do? I think there are some things. We can offer physical help within our own physical capability. You know, we're not as young as we used to be, but if it's possible to offer help in that way, it might be that we can help with finances. It might be that we can network. Jerry is one of the world's busiest networkers. He loves to connect people. Well, if there's perhaps you know of medical personnel, doctors, that could be of some help. Maybe you have educational resources through friends. I mean, we've lived a lot longer than our kids have, and so we might be able to resource for them in ways they couldn't do for themselves. And we've already had one suggestion this morning about when there's government help available and the cautions we need to follow when we're trying to participate as well. So I think we can go back to this next week if we like, but just that these are two very strong possibilities, that there could be a death and that there could be disabilities, and we'll be involved.
Okay, next week we'll...
got the wrong one.
Next week we'll begin, we'll review this just slightly, and you may have some inputs. We're out of time today, but on you may have experienced death, you may have grandchildren with disabilities, you can contribute to us. Then we'll get into step grandparenting, other circumstances, and then continue on with just wherever we are. And like I say, we're working through this at the same time. Yes?
Just a little functional question. Are these large enough to read from the back, or would you like them larger? You can.
Yeah.
You must be young. You still have wonderful
vision. All right. Please help us with this roster. Make sure husband and wife's name, any other things. If you haven't given us one, and we will reprint that this week and bring this back to you so you can have a record of everybody who is here. So let me just close in a word of prayer, and we can sit around and chat if we wish, but let's close now. Father, thank you for this time. Lord, these are hard things. These are not simple. And even the suggestions we make are not either complete or simple. And so, Father, help us that these things will stimulate our thinking and that we will begin to develop patterns that will really aid our grandchildren and our children in difficult circumstances. So we commit it to you in Christ's name. Amen.